Arizona's news station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
When was the last time that Trump was here, the downtown rally? Was that a year ago?
Yeah. Remember that rally?
Police are firing either rubber bullets or blanks at us as they're trying to move the people away from the convention.
I went down there. I was down there. I left before the tear gassing began, but
well,
I went down and walked around the area and saw the protests, the counter-protests, the people going in. It was interesting to say the least.
I think it was like July, August 2017.
It was warm. I remember it was hot because we were handing out water. There were these street corners just handing out water to everyone to keep them from passing out. Well, the word went out just a little while ago that Trump was coming back to the Valley to hold another one of these rallies. And immediately, I thought it was kind of interesting because the minute that they said, you know, they're looking for a place, immediately a lot of the places immediately started saying, yeah, but you can't come here. Like the Phoenix Convention Center said, well, and you got to read between the lines here. They said, well, we don't have anything booked, but we're doing maintenance that day. We're cleaning, we're washing our hair. We're cleaning the carpets. We couldn't possibly have anybody in here.
Interesting.
And so it became, well, where would this rally be held? Well, now we know that according to permits, because, you know, you have to go through all this, that Trump will not be coming to the Valley.
Yes, we found out yesterday that President Donald Trump is not going to be making a visit here to the Valley this month. Initially, it was reported that he had been looking at some dates and some certain different venues. And that caused some concerns for a couple of different organizations out there because of what you just heard and what had devolved after the stop here in 2017.
Yeah.
But it's a question of, did the president decide, you know what, I don't really feel like going to Phoenix. I've got other things that I need to prioritize.
It's a long flight.
I don't know if it was hot or if it was a long flight factor too much into the equation. He was in Vegas yesterday.
There is that.
Or, you know, was it more along the lines beyond the venue, you know, speculation there? Take a look at the political climate for which we're in right now in the state of Arizona. There are some tough races.
Sure.
And it depends on which polls you're looking at to find out how tough these races really are. But they have become national races that parties on both sides of the aisle all across the country, not just here in this state, are watching.
Where previously races in Arizona were never competitive, at least R versus D.
McCain was going to win.
You knew ahead of time.
Kyle was going to win.
The Ds just put somebody up and go, you know, they'll get 35% of the vote, and they're going to lose.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a different situation right now. We know that after Senator Kyle had retired, Senator Flake had won.
Yeah.
And then Senator Flake decided
handily, by the way.
Yeah, not going to run for re-election, which has really opened up that seat. That seat now, one way or another, is going to be filled by a woman. And it'll be the first time Arizona has a female senator, which is super cool.
Yeah.
It'll either be Martha McSally on the right for the Republicans or Kyrsten Sinema on the left for Democrats. And that race is tight.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of which way you think it might be leaning, it is tight, and it's tighter than a Senate race in the state of Arizona has been in quite some time.
Okay.
Within the margin of error,
so since it's tight,
yeah,
I would assume that Martha McSally would want President Trump to come here and stump for her. Because you know what? He's talked about her before.
The first woman ever to fly a fighter jet in combat in U.S. history. And I've gotten to know her very well, and she is terrific. Congresswoman Martha McSally.
Okay, so you've got a tight race here in Arizona. We've heard about the Trump bump before. Why wouldn't Martha McSally want the president here to stump for her?
I think that there are calculations that are going on from different politicians. Let's use Representative McSally to start with. In her primary, she was not the most Trumpiest of Republicans. She was the least Trumpiest of the three running, McSally, Ward and Arpaio.
Yeah, but you also got to look at, you know, Ward and Arpaio. Yeah, I
but you understand, I'm grading on a curve.
As you said, Trumpiest.
She was the least Trumpiest.
But she also tried to move closer to Trump.
Agreed.
In that primary.
Knowing who she was running against.
As a congresswoman during the 2016 election, she did not go to the RNC. She had not been critical. To the Republican National Convention. She had been critical of this president. But during a primary, we know that you kind of got to move farther to the fringes in order to get your party's nominee. And she played the political game in the primary, and it worked. But would she not gain some value from having the president come and speak with her?
And I think that is the calculation.
So play along
with me here.
Okay.
Right now, if you look at some of the polling, Trump is polarizing, to say the least.
Oh, yeah, we know that. But what about here in our state?
Right now in the state, and we had new polling that came out recently that showed that Martha McSally had higher approval ratings than Donald Trump.
Congresswoman McSally had higher approval ratings in the state. Okay.
So how does it help her to stand on stage with Donald Trump? She doesn't need to come down to his level. She needs to appeal to people away from the Trump base.
Okay, so you're reading this as to say, Bruce, that by her already having a higher approval rating, if you are a Trump supporter, you're already on the McSally train.
You're certainly not voting for Kirsten Sinema.
Okay, so
is that a fair way to put it?
So McSally is going after are the moderates, the people in the middle that are undecided.
Which we know in the state of Arizona is the majority of voters don't call themselves RRDs.
Okay, so kind of game theorying this out, if you're going after the moderate voter,
you don't want to be a picture of you standing next to Trump, especially during Me Too, Kavanaugh, all the stuff that's going on. The last thing you want to do is get a picture of you standing next to him, having him hold your hand up in
victory. Okay. You're making a compelling argument.
You can get the Trump voter without having to stand next to him and turn away the anti-Trump voter.
I'm still trying to peel away whether or not this was a president's decision or whether he wasn't really welcomed here. So let's move on.
Because if he decided to come here and, for example, Martha McSally or Governor Ducey didn't show up on stage with them, that makes it even harder on them.
Well, I mean, you know, the president can hold his own campaign rallies and drop their names. I mean, do they have to be there?
When he shows up in your backyard and you don't show up, isn't that a de facto... That's the I'm washing my hair that night.
I couldn't make it
to your rally.
But wouldn't that then play well to the moderates out there? Because it's
upset the Trumpies.
But the Trump supporters aren't going to get so upset about that they then vote for Kirsten Sinema.
No, they might not vote for McSally. They might sit it out.
Okay, well, let's move on from the.
So
Senate
you can
race.
you can get their de facto support by just not being against him,
or not even making it part of the equation.
Try not to make Trump part of your argument.
Okay, let's move on from the Senate race and let's talk about the gubernatorial race, the race for governor. Here we've
Doug
got
Ducey, yeah.
Governor Ducey running for re-election against Democrat David Garcia.
And let's be honest, Ducey has a decent lead. This is not a nip and tuck race as of right now. It's not. Ducey, in every single poll, has a decent lead, and
not
in most of them,
poll.
He's outside the margin of error.
It hasn't been every single poll. It depends on which poll you're looking at. And so, while I think Ducey still has a lead, not every single poll has him leading. So let's do the same thing with Governor Ducey as we just did there with Congresswoman Martha McSally. Let's say the president shows up here in Phoenix. And Governor Ducey doesn't appear because from what I can remember, what I've been able to kind of decipher here, I don't know of a time when Governor Ducey has actually appeared with Donald Trump at like one of these kind of campaign rallies.
He wasn't at the one last year, I know.
He
was not. He wasn't downtown.
Now, if it has something to do with his job, because I know that Governor Ducey has gone to D.C. as the governor for governor's meetings.
Sometimes when lands at the airport, you meet them at the airport.
And he has gone to Trump rallies. Mm-hmm. He just has never appeared alongside him.
I am here tonight because I believe the right direction is the one that puts a conservative justice on the Supreme Court to replace Antonin Scalia.
Yeah, that was back in 2016.
That's not exactly a ringing endorsement of Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's kind of what I got there. Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So, well, Trump is not coming here, and I think there's a variety of reasons, and I think some of it is he would show up here to, quote, campaign for Republicans who don't want to be seen standing next to him.
Well, there are some rumors, though, swirling about maybe he will he'll go up to either Prescott or Flagstaff.
Much friendlier audience up there, lot less opposition.
But then, I mean, Governor Ducey is the governor of all of Arizona.
Oh, I couldn't possibly make it up to Prescott. I'm very booked that day.
Representative McSally is running to be a senator for all of Arizona.
I've got an event in Tucson that night. I'm sorry, I can't make it.
With the, when the president of the United States shows up in your own backyard, see, you can make that same argument.
Yeah,
man.
We'll see what happens, right? All right? Hey, it's Football Friday. The Cardinals be facing the Chicago Bears. We've got Cardinals radio analyst and co-host of the Doug and Wolf Show, Ron Wolfley, joining us next.
It's Football Friday on the Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes Show. With Arizona Cardinals radio color analyst and co-host of the Doug and Wolf Show on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station, Ron Wolfley.
Wow, that is some bloody knuckle football. Lapped up like a bowl of chowder. Wow! Lowered the boom and lapped it up.
Football Friday. Brought to you by the Carol Royce Realty Team. Your home sold guaranteed, or Carol will buy it herself. Go to CarolHasTheBuyers.com.
Wolf, thank you for joining us in studio today, especially on a Friday as you get ready to head out for the weekend. But tough times for the Cardinals. And you have been in this seat in the sense of you played on Cardinal teams that started the season 0-2 that were struggling. I'm trying to be nice in here somewhere. And how hard is it to get motivated to head out on the field when you are questioning everything about the team?
Yeah, listen, Ev, for the players, it's not hard. It's what they do. They're going to go out there and they're going to play, right, hopefully. And I know that back when I was playing, I can tell you, I never played in a game. It was always a test to me. Every time I walked in between those white lines, it was a test. Are you as tough as your dad? I'm not going to bore you with the psychology of all that, I can tell you, I played the game for different reasons than a lot of guys. Having said all of that, I expect them to be prepared and go out and ball, flat out ball in this game, because no matter how you want to parse it, it's really difficult to look at 0-3 and put a happy spin on that at
all. Yeah, it's tough.
Okay, so you're saying that the players are ready to go out and ball against the Bears.
The Bears.
You know, they're prepared to do that. Are you going to see a different kind of team show up? I mean, what's going on in this week?
You would hope that there's going to be an awful lot of desperation. I mean, they're playing at home once again at State Farm Stadium, playing at home in front of the Red Sea, of course, and knowing that there is no return from 0-3 for the most part, and looking at a long season. Can you imagine playing 3 weeks of a 17-week season and saying to yourself, oh my goodness, this is going to be bad.
Well, it's
going to
hurt. And I'm just talking about human nature. And again, never having suited up, never been in a locker room, never been in that huddle, there has to be some doubt that starts creeping in when you go back and you look at that and you say, well, in the game last weekend, we didn't cross the 50-yard line until about 30 seconds ago in the game.
28 seconds.
Okay,
exact,
I mean, I didn't. I'm exaggerating.
You're
to make it look
it, though,
better,
Bruce.
But that you've got to look at that and go, you know, the Bears are pretty good.
There's no doubt about it. And right now, listen, anytime you have a situation where your quarterback is struggling and you've got a guy that was a high draft pick, a guy that was number 10 overall taken behind him, who you think is going to be the future of your franchise down the road, anytime that scenario exists, you know what? The clock is ticking when the quarterback is not playing well. And Sam Bradford would be the first guy to tell you he's not playing well through the first two games of the season. And that has started the Josh Rosen clock.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so you got a QB that's struggling. You say it's starting the Josh Rosen clock. I mean, is this the game that it's determined as to when and if you start talking about Josh?
Nobody has told me this, Pamela, okay? This is my own thought right here, okay? Nobody has told me this over there whatsoever. But if, in fact, you get a situation like Baker Mayfield last night, just watching it, right, where Tyrod Taylor was 4-14 in the first half. 4-14. Now, I know he went out with a concussion right there. But if, in fact, Sam Bradford, let's just say, hypothetically, was 4-14 in the first half and they were down 14 points in the first half and they were struggling the way that we have seen them struggle offensively in the first two games, if, in fact, that scenario exists and repeats itself, I would not be surprised to see them go to Josh Rosen at the half.
Ooh, okay.
And for Rosen to come out. Now, again, nobody's told me
I
that.
Hear you.
Pure speculation on
is,
my part.
Now, there is a certain argument, and again, I can look at this dispassionately, wearing my Redskins jersey today.
Yes, of course.
My Daryl Green jersey. Like I figured you played against Daryl.
I love Daryl Green.
Yes, no, I know you did. That's why I wore it for you today.
I forgive you for that.
Wore it for you. I told Wolf, you probably saw the back of this jersey a lot. Daryl Green was super fast. Fastest guy in the NFL.
No doubt.
If your team is not playing well, and I'm going to be fair, I don't think it's solely on the quarterback
Amen.
Position.
Well done by you.
Do you throw a rookie into the Wolves when he doesn't have an offensive line to play by, when the running game isn't established, when you don't have receivers that are open, and you find out, well, guess what? He's now really in trouble.
Did you happen to see when Baker Mayfield came on the field?
I did.
I did. What happened to the Cleveland Browns? All of a sudden,
they did perk up.
This listless offense suddenly looked like what they were ready to ball.
They won the first time in 600 days.
Sometimes you need a different face and a different voice calling the play. And
interesting.
Maybe a different spin on it.
Ron Wolfley, thanks so much. We
you
got Wolf
the
there.
No.
Cardinals radio analyst and co-host of the Doug and Wolf Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Ding.
Do you want your rookie first round pick to be facing Khalil Mack?
No. No.
He's a monster for the Bears.
Happy
right?
birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, well, how old are you?
Too old. Too old to be doing this.
How old?
Man, you're needling.
What do you mean?
You're needling.
Come on, it's just a number.
We've had major voting issues in Maricopa County during the primaries, so why is the county recorder saying everything's coming up roses? We're going to talk about that coming up next on Arizona's News Station.
Arizona's News Station. KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
At the primary that was held just a few weeks ago, I think we can acknowledge there were some issues, I'm being polite, at some of the polling stations. We heard a lot of comments from people that had been turned away from maybe not one, not two, but three different places in their attempt to vote on Election Day. But your Maricopa County recorder, Adrian Fontes, thinks it went pretty well.
Elections are never perfect. They're just improved upon year in and year out. And given the performance that we've had in past years, and given the way that we were able to overcome the circumstances that we saw in August, I think this was a success. I think it was a success that showed that we had the grit, the stick-to-itiveness, and the capacity to handle difficult situations and really have ourselves about as close to 100% as we could expect. By the middle of the day.
Is he really saying that this was a success? Is he seriously saying, hey, you know what? Because it was so hard, it gave us an opportunity to deep down inside formulate that grit and rise above. No, sir, there shouldn't have been this many problems to begin with.
Yeah.
62 polling locations across our county not ready to open at 6 a.m. More than 200 complaints filed on Election Day, including malfunctioning technology, logistical issues, privacy concerns. That's how you define success?
This is not me defending Mr. Fontes, but millions of people voted. Hundreds of people had problems. Statistically, is that big a deal? And I will acknowledge that there are issues that are outside the control of the county recorder, okay? My issue would be with the ones that appear to be within the control of the county recorder that they don't appear to be taking as seriously.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, a little bit, because Maricopa County Recorder Adrian Fontes yesterday also said this, and I don't think it helped his case much, Bruce.
The kind of work that we really needed to get done that didn't get done was essentially as complicated as plugging in a PS4 or a Wii or a game, an Xbox or something like that. This is not rocket science, and it should have been done better, and we're going to do it ourselves.
Okay, so you're saying that the problems were not rocket science,
no,
but yet your office was still unable to make sure they happened.
So what does that say?
Exactly.
These were very easily fixed. So why weren't they?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So how are we supposed to have that much confidence that it's going to be taken care of next time? Well, there are issues. And the Board of Supervisors is now investigating.
Okay.
And this is like an all hands on deck. The spotlight has been put on it.
I do
expect the general election on November 6th to run smoothly.
Yeah.
Why? Because now they're paying attention. It didn't appear as though they were doing that much before the primary.
How could they not pay attention to the primary, especially when a year ago we know we had issues before. We've had issues in some of the other, a year or 2 years ago, that these have been ongoing. Now, do we live in a bubble? I mean, are these conversations going on everywhere? Because I didn't hear about them in Tucson. Do you see what I'm saying?
You mean in other counties
in Pima County, I didn't hear like people up in arms over this. So it leads me to believe that there is something unique. Granted, more people voting in Maricopa County, but do we have a handle? And will we acknowledge that there are problems? And specifically, what are you doing to fix them?
Well, Adrian Fontes, the county recorder, talking yesterday about the voting issues of the primary and then how they are going to fix them in the general election. Take a listen to this, Bruce.
All right.
Regardless of the fact that we were in a little bit of a tough spot at 6 a.m., we fought through it. And that's really the idea. It reminds me really of, it's just like the Marine Corps was ready for the Japanese before World War II. We've been fighting amphibious conflicts in Central America through the 30s.
Wow.
And by the time we ended up in the Southern Pacific after Pearl Harbor, the United States Marine Corps was ready for an island hopping campaign that ended up being relatively successful in a pretty quick period of time, even though Pearl Harbor was as devastating as it was to our American military.
Wait a minute.
So I think it's a great analogy to where we're at.
The analogy is
Pearl Harbor.
The primary was Pearl Harbor, but the general election is going to be what? Dropping the bomb on Nagasaki? Like your analogy. I mean, you went a ways for that one.
Yeah, we're equating some 2,300 American soldiers that died.
I'm like,
Pearl Harbor.
Where are you going with this?
Your issues with plugging in a Wii and an Xbox.
Yeah, I don't think that's the best analogy.
Yeah, I think he dug the hole a little deeper with some of these analogies, saying it's not rocket science. Well, then why didn't you do it?
I understand that there are people that like going to the polling centers and like dropping the thing.
You know what
in
they
there.
Like? No, I don't think they like going. They, you know what they like?
What do they like?
They like the sticker. They like the I voted sticker.
Okay. Because it would never dawn on me to go to one of those places. I do it all by mail.
Yeah, me too.
You know, and so I don't feel like I'm a part of this. So I do admit that I'm removed from it. I couldn't tell you if there were polling issues at my place. I don't know where my polling place is. I have no idea. I do it in the little envelope comes. I check the little boxes, put it in the mail.
How does it go in the mail?
Okay. And I will do that this time. Don't some of these, I wonder, are there people out there who had problems?
Mm-hmm.
Would you vote by mail this time to avoid the problems, or are you just going to keep going back expecting them to fix it?
Well, I mean, I think that there are a variety of different reasons why people will show up at polling centers on election day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're not registered for early ballot. Maybe they don't know how to go about doing that. It's pretty easy, folks, but
yes,
I'm trying to consider all options here. Maybe they got the early ballot, filled it out, and left it at home that day and forgot to grab it on their way out. And so they had to
legitimate
show up at the polling
reasons,
spot. Or they want to go and feel like they're doing their civic duty, through that process. And then there are others that just want the sticker, okay?
And the sticker people, we're just going to call you sticker people.
There are a variety of different reasons. And frankly, I don't care what your reasons are. If you want to show up and vote on primary day or on election day, it should be easy. If you are registered, it should be easy.
We should have as minimal amount of restrictions to voting. I agree.
Now, the county recorder is saying, well, we were trying to make it easy for people because we did set up these 40 vote centers.
Those super centers.
Where anybody could have gone and voted. It didn't have to be, you know, your polling place.
Yeah.
Anybody could have gone.
All across town.
But there was also lack of preparation there because the volunteers at polling sites did not know about these voting centers to tell people to go to. So we were hearing those stories of people going to one, two, three places to cast their ballot.
I just get back to this. You have one job.
It's not rocket science, though.
You have one job.
It may be like Pearl Harbor.
It's elections. It's not even every day.
Plug in the Xbox.
You've got one job. Okay? The dates are on the calendar. This is not a surprise when it's happening. By the way, there's one coming up in November.
Uh-oh.
Circle. Yeah, if that's a shock to the county recorders. Life insurance companies, how much of your physical activity, think of your Fitbit, your fitness tracker, would you share with them? What if you got a break on your rates? Tell you what, we'll talk about it coming up next.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
So we know that big data out there, there are companies and organizations and websites that collect information on you, little tidbits, and they put it all together and they come up with this profile that you exist digitally with a million different data points. Well, there are life insurance companies out there, thinking just insurance companies in general, that want to learn more about you. And dare I say, I don't think it's necessarily in your best interest that they're trying to do this.
Yeah, but John Hancock is trying to make it look as though it is in your best interest. So
Spidey senses are up.
Yeah, so are mine. So are mine. So, you know, they offer life insurance.
Sure.
And they have in the past offered some policies that will give you certain benefits if you allow them to access the health data that you get through your wearable devices. Think Fitbits, think Apple Watches, think all.
You know, your Apple phone does.
Sure.
It does that well. It monitors your steps and things like that.
Yeah,
your sleep
I think
whatnot.
That happens more for guys than for girls because girls keep their phones in their purses and guys keep them in their pockets.
Okay, I hadn't thought of it.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly. Thank a variety of different, you know, gadgets out there that are tracking this kind of health data. And so some policies were offering, you know, incentives to give them access to it. But now we find out that all policies will sell this interactive fitness tracking data because they want access to it. And here's what they're willing to give you for access. It's kind of like, a store loyalty points with a bit of, I don't know, Hunger Games.
Ouch.
So you can spin the wheel after you work out, a number of times.
Okay.
Or, you know, you're tracking your food and you've got healthy food purchases. So after you track this, you then can win gift cards for places like Amazon or REI. You could get discounts for other fitness trackers. And this is so in my wheelhouse. I shop at REI.
Yeah.
I love me some Amazon.
Okay.
And I've got fitness trackers. And
this could help you.
Since I'm already working out.
You're already doing these things.
Why not get something for it? But.
Yeah.
Yeah, my spidey senses are tingling
I'm thinking, why?
It seems as though Big Brother already has too much of our data. What could possibly go wrong with life insurance companies getting access to your most private health data?
Yeah, they are, if I understand it correctly, and there are people out there in the insurance world listening, you know, the world is all about actuary tables.
Yeah.
Okay. What are the premiums we collect versus what do we pay out? We better be taking in more in premiums than we're paying out, or we're an X insurance company. Okay.
Well, yeah.
So they determine premiums for life insurance, health insurance, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, based on how much you're going to use. So they want this information because it helps them, I say, better price insurance. But I can't imagine it's better price it as in less.
Well, the other aspect, too, is when you're talking about life insurance, I get the incentive for them wanting you to live as long as possible because they want you to pay into that policy long as possible. So if they can get access...
You live to be 102, you've paid a lot of life insurance.
So if they can track your health data and then offer you incentives to be healthier and, in essence, live longer, then they're going to get more money.
That's the altruistic view
of it. Yeah, and that would pay off. But when you look at this information, and I think we're becoming a little desensitized to giving away so much of our own privacy, there's a reason why when you go to the doctor, you've got HIPAA laws where they can't discuss your health with other people because it's private.
Right.
It's yours. And it's very sensitive information that could have some long-ranging impacts if other people were to get their hands on it.
Ways that you may not even be aware of. And I think that might be the thing that even I will acknowledge, being the one who shares information more readily than you do, that I might be sharing information, be it fitness information, health information, whatever, and it can be used against me in ways that I hadn't even thought of or ways that I might even become aware of.
Well, exactly. And
right?
So it's kind of one of these, what don't you know is what could hurt you. But it also, Bruce, my entrepreneurial mind kind of, firing on all cylinders as I start hearing this here. Okay, all right. right. So you know what? If the insurance companies want to get into the, you know, the Fitbit and health tracking kind of area, and you decide that you want to sign up for it, for a small nominal fee, you can give me your Fitbit tracker or whatever fitness tracker you have.
Okay.
I'll strap it onto my arm in the morning when I go to burn boot camp.
Oh, I see where you're
going. And you can get your minutes, you can get your heart rate, you can get your exercise.
And you get your break on insurance, but I never have to get off the couch.
And I get a little bump myself. You see what I'm saying?
I was going to one up you. I was going to think, what if I just take my fitness tracker and I attach it to like the dog or the cat's collar?
There you go.
Or the ceiling fan.
Make sure the dog or the cat is healthy.
The ceiling fan. Just have it spinning around and around and go, boy, I don't know. How did you get 48,000 steps in today?
It's kind of hard, though.
I never stopped walking.
To get a heart rate off a ceiling fan.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Do you like the kitty and puppy idea? I don't know.
Yeah, it's kind of good.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I think immediately if they came up with that, there would be people that were trying
totally
to job the system, right?
Totally.
Yeah. I'm going to figure a way around this. We'll break them. We have some movement. Brett Kavanaugh's accuser has been invited to testify at the Senate, but it's not meeting all of her demands. What happens next? We'll talk about it. Coming up next on Arizona's News Station.